Okay, well, thank you very much. It's really an honor and a privilege to be able to give this year, and a very beautiful introduction. Thank you. Hope I can live up to those words. So Shavuos is coming, as you mentioned, so I thought let's spend some time getting ready, specifically going through some of the psukim of Kabbalah Satorah. What I'd like to work through and really learn together and highlight is what I find a fascinating aspect of the story that the Torah tells us when it relates Kabbalah Satorah. The Torah paints a certain picture in a number of different areas. And what's fascinating is Chazal, in the Medrash and in the Gemara, on a number of occasions, give us a very different picture than what the Torah itself gives. And it begs the question of what message Chazal are trying to convey and why they do that. Just as an example, this is not the one that I'd like to talk about tonight, but just as an example, one of the more famous examples, if you were to ask anyone who read through the Chumash what Klal Yisrael's perspective was, if they wanted the Torah, if they didn't want the Torah, how they related to it, a reading of the Psukim would net the result that everybody would say, of course they wanted it. It says numerous times, Kol Asher Dibir Hashem Naaseh, whatever Hashem wants we'll do. They say Naaseh V'Nishma. A couple of different times we have that. Every time Moshe goes up and down Har Sinai and comes back to the people are interested. And Chazal very famously on the pasuk of Ya'amod B'Tachtis Ahar, that Klal Yisrael stood at the foot of the mountain, darshan that it was like as if they stood literally under the mountain, and Hashem held the mountain over their head and threatened them that if they don't accept the Torah, they're all going to be buried right there and they're all going to die. And Tosfos already asks the question, all the Mefarshim ask, why did they need to be forced into it? They agreed. But the question is even deeper than just why did they need it. It's why do Chazal paint such a different picture? The picture the Torah gives us is one of willing consent, and then Chazal come and they give us a picture of coercion. And that in itself begs the whole shir, which is not for tonight, the idea, the combination of wanting something on your own, the idea of being forced into it, and how that those two interplay in our lives as Jews, those two feelings together of us deciding we want this and yet feeling I don't have a choice, I have to. But that's just an example of where Chazal add a layer to the story beyond what the simple reading of the Psukim would often give us. I'd like to do another one of those and see what it yields us. I assume you do not have Chumashim in front of you, but I will read a series of Psukim. And the aspect that I'd like to highlight is the scene of Har Sinai. If you were a director of a play or a film and you were reenacting this massive event in Jewish history, this greatest event of Kabbalah Satorah, how would you present the scene? What would it look like? How would you paint the picture of this event? And the Psukim make it very, very clear. In the beginning of Perek Yates, right before the actual Aseres HaDibros, Klal Yisrael arrives at Midbar Sinai, and the Torah describes a number of times that Moshe goes up and down the mountain to relay various messages. And at the as he comes down with one of the messages, Hashem tells him, "Hayu nechoinim l'shloshes yamim, be prepared for 3 days." And they get themselves prepared. They wash the clothing. They are mekadesh themselves. And then the Torah gives us the following description: "Vayi vayom ashlishi." It was the third day in the morning. "Vayi kolos uvrakim va'anon kaved al hahar." There was thunder and lightning, and a heavy cloud was on the mountain. And the sound of the shofar, v'kol shofar chazak me'od, was very powerful. And in the midst of this thunder and lightning and a heavy cloud and the shofar, the Torah describes, v'yecherad kol ha'am asher b'machaneh. The people trembled and shuddered from the sound. V'yotze Moshe has on the cross. And Moshe has to then go get the people and bring them close from the camp, Vayis Yatzvu, to gather them to Tachtis Ahar at the foot of the mountain, the Har Sinai Ashan Kulo, in the mount, the entire Mount Sinai was smoking, Vipnei Asher Yorod Alav Hashem Ba'esh, because Hashem had descended on it in a fire, Vayal Ashano Ke'eshon Akiv Shon, and then the Torah describes the smoke ascending like the smoke of a furnace, Vayecharad Kol Hahar Ma'od. And the Torah says, and the entire mountain shuddered, me'od, exceedingly. Va'ikola shofar holech v'chazek me'od. And then the sound of the shofar, which you've already described, the Torah describes a second time, continually grew much stronger. Moshe yidaber alokim ya'anenu b'kol, and Moshe would speak and Hashem would answer him. And from this scene of smoke, fire, like a kivshan ha'esh, and the sound of the shofar, the mountain itself is trembling, the people are trembling. That's the image that the Torah gives us of Kabbalah Satorah. The Torah then begins its description, or goes through all of the Aseres HaDibros, and in the very next pasuk, following the Aseres HaDibros, right after the first pasuk after Aseres HaDibros, V'chol ha'am ro'em es ha'kolos v'salapidim v'es kol ha'shofar. The people saw the thunder, they saw the flames, they saw the sound of the shofar and the smoking mountain, and they saw vayar vayanu, and they trembled vayamdu merachok. And they say to Moshe, you have to talk to Hashem, we can't handle this. So the picture is, I think, exceedingly clear. What the Torah wants us to visualize of what the scene was like was a terrifying moment of thunder, lightning, of smoke, of a shofar blowing, of a mountain itself that trembled, and the people that trembled. And that's the picture that Chazal gives us. We actually describe this every single year on Rosh Hashanah. If you remember back to Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, so we say the three sections, Malchus, Achronus, and Shofaros. And Shofaros begins with this description of Atonig Lesa Ba'anan Kvodecha. You revealed yourself with your cloud of glory, and how you min hashamayim hishma'atam kolacha. These are literally reading the opening phrases of Shofaros of Rosh Hashanah. And we describe kol ha'ulam kulo chol mipanacha. The entire universe shuddered before you. Uvrios bereshis chardu mimecha. And the creatures of your creation trembled before you. Behigalos chot malkeinu al arsid. When you revealed yourself to teach us Torah u'mitzvos, that's the picture of Vidabros Kotchachon Milahavos Esh, and we heard your utterances from fiery flames, Bikolos Uvrakim Aleyam Niglesa. You revealed yourself from thunder and from lightning, and then we begin the Psukim, Kakasubasarasachabayamashlishi, the Psukim that we just read. And that's how we say Musaf every year, Rosh Hashanah, it's the Psukim. It seems very, very clear as to what that image is. You look in the Medrash. The Medrash says, it's an oft-quoted Medrash, in Shmos Rabbah. The Medrash says as follows. Amar Rabbi Avo B'Shem Rabbi Yochanan. Kishanasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asa Torah. When Hashem gave us the Torah, Tzipur Lo Tzavach. When He gave us the Torah, there was not a bird chirped. Oif Lo Parach. Not a fowl flew in the air. Shur Lo Ga'ah. An ox did not... whatever an ox does. I don't know exactly how to translate that. Oifanim lo afu. Not an angel ascended to heaven. Srafim lo amru kadosh kadosh. Nor did the Srafim proclaim kadosh kadosh. Hayam lo nizda azah. The sea did not roll. Vahabrios lo dibru. Not a creature said a word. Ela ha'olam shosek umacharish. The world, the entire universe was silent and mute. V'yotza hakol, and from that silence came the voice, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem, your God. Kishadibur Kadosh Baruch Hu Bahar Sinai, says the Medrash, when Hashem spoke to us, Hishtik kol ha'olam, the entire world was silent. Kidei sheyedu abrio she'in chutz mimeno, that everyone should know there is nothing other than Hashem, when He says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And the Medrash concludes in a magnificent way, Ulo Asud Lavo, and in the days to come, when Hashem will reveal Himself, we also will see the phrase, Anochi, Anochi, Hu Menachem Chem. I am the one who will comfort you. The pasuk from Yishayahu, playing on the words Anochi, in the same way that Anochi was, Hashem Elo, Anochi, Hashem Elokecha, was said in the silence, and through that the voice came out, Lo Asud Lavo will have the same thing of this total silence, and then from that silence will emit the words of Hashem, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's a magnificent medrash. The issue that it begs us to address is, it's bichlal, it's not at all what the Torah paints. The picture the Torah paints is a frightening scene of noise, of thunder, of lightning, of trepidation. And Chazal paint a picture of silence. They use that word in the medrash, Shosek u'macharish. The whole world is silent. Not a bird, not a person, the waves of the sea didn't even roll at the time that Hashem's voice comes out. It paints a totally different picture. If you were that director again, trying to replay the scene, you would create a very different scene than what it seems the Torah describes, which asks the question, what's the message? What are Chazal trying to teach in such a message with these two ideas? And I think it's worth, in discussing, taking them both separate, each presentation that the Torah gives us and that the Medrash gives us, the lessons or the meaning therein, as best we can come to some understanding, and then let's sort of see how we can put it together and what we can come with as far as they go together. So I guess I would start with the Torah's perspective. What's the significance? What's the meaning? Why is it that the Torah had to be given, or at least if it didn't have to be, that Hashem chose to give it in such a fashion, in such a dramatic, earth-shattering, noisy light and sound show? Why was that the greatest form for Kabbalah Satorah? And I think when you, as I'm sure thoughts are going through your minds as you think of that, right away what jumps out is the idea of its significance. The significance of the event demands a significant presentation. The giving of the Torah into the world, introducing into the world the Torah itself, was a massive event. When the Maharal describes, he asks this question of why did it have to be with such noise and such sound and such thunder and lightning. So he uses the language of kol hashinoi. Any major change requires a major change in the environment in which it is being brought. And so, since this significance, his exact language is min hadavar asher hu shinoi yimshach achar ze shinoi ulefi gadol hashinoi, and according to the greatness of the change that's being introduced, yimshach acharav shinoi gadol. So that's the level of significance that will be introduced with it. Just using a simple example, if you throw a major boulder into a quiet lake, so it's going to make a massive interruption into the scene. That's just the reality. So there's a spiritual reality that when you took a davar ruchni, the Torah itself, and when Hashem says Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the Zohar describes it, Ano Yoavis, Ano Nafshai Ksivos V'Hivis, I wrote myself into the Torah and gave it. And when that's introduced into the world, this ruchni into the Gashmi world, into the mundane world, is introduced with a spiritual massive event. There's no way to do that without, so to speak, an explosion here into this world. And that required the thunder and the lightning. The Maharal goes on to explain how each one of those thunder, lightning, shofar, and the smoke represents the Eish and the Mayim and the Ruach, the elements that the world was created with. And he goes into a whole discussion of that as to why specifically it required all of these things. But that the event demanded that kind of response to teach the awe, the fear, the Yiras Hashem, that's required. Couldn't be the kind of thing that you just, you looked, you didn't look, you paid attention, you didn't pay attention. It demanded your attention. It was so loud, it was so frightening, and it caused the mountain itself to tremble. How can you have a revelation of Hashem's presence without that, because of how significant that is? So that's certainly a first thought in looking at it, and a true thought, as the Maharal describes in that way. In addition to that, and I say like in addition to that, any good pulpit rabbi would want to give a drush or a sermon on such an episode would come up with an idea not as eloquent as the Maharal's, but he would certainly say that there's a message, a modern day message in that the Torah was given with such noise and such sound, in that that's our life. The Torah has to be kept in a world in which we live, in which there are 1,000 distractions going on around us. And if a Jew would ever say, I'm busy, I got a text I have to return, I got a phone call, I have this, I have that, there's always going to be some form of a distraction around us. And it requires of us an ability to focus on the things that we need to do despite the thunder and the lightning and everything that's going around. It's nice that everything should be sunny without a cloud in the sky and everything is perfect. The way that we plan our day, it always should happen. And our life should be the way that it always is that we plan we want it to be. And we know that that's not the way, it's not the way that it goes. And there's always an excuse that there's something else going on, taking up our time or our attention and distracting us. And so if one needed to give a sermon on the idea of the Torah being given with thunder and lightning and every possible distraction under the sun, one can go in such a direction as well, as far as that requirement. But be that as it may, I think the morale stands on its own without that, that the Torah demands, the experience, the revelation of Hashem demands that kind of experience of the noise and everything. On the flip side, if we were to ask us on an independent level, what's the message, the meaning of the fact that Chazal paint us in the Medrash that it was total silence? When Anochi Hashem Elokecha comes out, when we hear Hashem's voice, there's nothing there. And that's almost expresses an idea on the opposite side of the spectrum. Rav Shimshon Pinkas in his wonderful Sefer on Shabbos, Shabbos Malkasa, he quotes this Medrash as well, and he describes, he says very simply, it's not the pshat that Hashem needed there to be silence in order for him to be heard. Analogous, like this is not what it was. I heard recently a shir from Rabbi Yeshua Grunstein, who lives in Eretz Yisrael. He was quoting Sivan Rav Meir, who was an Israeli journalist who had interviewed somebody who was in Los Angeles many years ago when President Reagan came to speak. And so she reported that this person had said that when the president came to speak, it was some dinner, that his team had instructed the caterers very, very clearly that after the dinner was served, before the president spoke, everything had to be cleared from the tables. Everything. The food, the plates, the cutlery, the glasses, nothing on the table could be on any of the people's tables before the president spoke. So originally the person who was in charge of the event who was being interviewed said he thought it was like a security thing, that there shouldn't be out of silverware, knives, forks, whatever. And said, no, it's nothing to do with security. It was simply a matter of when the president of the United States speaks, there can't be any distractions. No noise, no clanking of cups and forks and people playing with their food. There can't be a distraction when the president speaks. So Pinkas says, that's not what's going on with Ribbono Shel Olam. It wasn't that he said there can't be any distraction. Now you can, it's almost the exact opposite. It's when everything is silenced, you can listen carefully and you'll hear Anochi Hashem Elokecha. There are so many distractions that we have, other pieces of noise that take us away. It's the answer to the famous question that everybody asks. Everybody asks this question, why is it, they say, that my house only creaks at night? Famous question. Why is it? During the day, I don't hear anything. All of a sudden, at night, I hear every creak and crack and this and that. And the answer, of course, is obvious, because at night, there's no other noise and no other distractions. You hear everything at night. You could hear the hum of the air.